Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff today. We are going to talk about Charlie Kirk's assassination, Antifa being rounded up. We got health, the CD really being cooked over the fire. We got a lot of stuff to get into, but I want to start with a video from a former leftist shoe on head. Here's her reaction to Charlie Kirk's murder.
Happened. I disagreed with him all the time. You can literally go to our Twitter interactions. I was always correcting him about, like, Bernie Sanders. I made an egg look like his face. It is safe to say I was no fan. But this has really shaken me in a way that I absolutely did not expect. These last few days after what happened, I kept going to every single, like, lefty, liberal, left-wing person I know and, like, checking out what they have been saying about this. And besides maybe, like, four or five, every single one was being an unhinged psychopath about this. Gun control, which, first of all, we were just watching a whole bunch of people celebrate killing someone over political differences. You are never taking our guns now. That is not happening. I felt like I was in the middle of the ocean. I was trying to, like, grasp onto a flotation device, checking all of these accounts for their take, like, be normal, be normal. Nothing. Nobody. I'm just drowning in a sea of evil, apparently. Maybe I was just blind up until now. Maybe they changed. Maybe I changed. Is everyone going crazy or am I going crazy? I don't know. All I know is it is clear how they reacted to this is how they would react to me, my family, my friends, you, your family, your friends that have ever stepped out of line from the nebulous, ever-changing definition of progressive. These are people I thought were level-headed. They were left-wing, but, you know, like, they were one of the good ones. Like, you can joke with them, you know? They weren't those, like, woke SJWs. Like, they were cool. We can disagree and still be friends. You know. Your friend wouldn't celebrate you being murdered, of course. But if they would celebrate an exact clone of you that wasn't you, that had all the same opinions, or some of the opinions that you have, if they would celebrate that clone being murdered, they're not your friend. I'm friends with people who are friends with Charlie, and I see how they are completely broken about this. Seeing them like this, and then at the same time my other friends posting shit like, "Rip, bozo." It's just sick. It's just sick shit. Personally, I would rather live in a world full of Charlie Kirks who would sit down and debate than a world full of people who agree with me but would murder people who don't. Because if it's now normalized to just murder people who disagree with you politically, we don't have a society. Like, that's it. It's over. But some of these people in particular, like, why the fuck are you celebrating? You! They think you're a Nazi too. They'll make a nice compilation of all the hot takes you've had over the years and spread it around to justify your murder. You don't get it, do you? We are all Charlie Kirk. I have been doing this for 11 years. I have been harassed, doxxed, threatened, whatever, you name it, for 11 years by the left. And it hasn't moved me an inch because that's not how politics works. That's lunch table politics. I've talked about this before. People on your side being mean to you doesn't mean you overnight change your opinions on, like, healthcare. It doesn't work that way. I still have all my economic left opinions. I'm for strong social safety nets, workers' rights, unions, wealth caps, whatever. That has not changed. This is not me leaving the left because, frankly, I don't even know how to do that. This is me and many, many people looking around us at our so-called allies and realizing that even though we might share some, like, political opinions, we fundamentally do not have the same values or morals. And are we really allies if we agree on, like, taxes, but don't agree on the sanctity of human life? I don't know. The news cycle will move on. The world will move on. Charlie Kirk's kids won't move on. His daughter won't move on. His daughter does not have a dad anymore. And that fucking sucks. That sucks.
There are only two sides. There's good and there's evil. There's life and there's death. Choose. Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. Share those links. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Harrison H. Smith, X, I guess it's called now, at Harrison H. Smith, at Infowars. You can be, you know, following the streams there. And of course, anything you do to spread the word, we greatly appreciate it. We have a huge show for you today. We'll be joined by Lisa Logan in the third hour. And we also did a pre-recorded interview with Australian musical artist Aya May that will air in the second half of the third hour as well. And that one's very fun. Very good. Good way to go into the weekend, I think. We're going to talk about, of course, the murder of Charlie Kirk, the continuing saga of the assassination and the fallout. Donald Trump has declared Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. At least he intends to sign an order of that effect. To that effect, he wrote as much on his Truth Social platform. This is caused a lot of confusion and outrage on the left, who were really sure that they were on the right side of history and that things would constantly be moving for the to the left forever. And so they've taken no precautions to deal with the off chance that maybe their criminal activity is not looked upon as benign by an administration. So they're kind of freaking out and they're scrambling to, you know, sever ties with other groups, to delete social media posts that reveal what a well-organized and orchestrated series of groups this is. And look, when this order gets signed, if it gets signed, as Trump has said he'll do, it really opens up the floodgates for investigating Antifa and getting their funding mechanisms rounded up. And of course, we don't really need investigations to get into this. We already know. We've done the investigations. They're actually kind of out in the open about all of it. And it's all the same sources that cause all the other problems in this country. It's George Soros, it's the ADL, it's the SPLC. I mean, these are the people that provide the lawyers to get them out of prison. But of course, they're already in collaboration with the authorities on the ground, either in the police helping to coordinate the riots or the judges helping to sweep it all under the rug. It's a well-orchestrated, well-organized, well-oiled machine of hatred and death that they're running in this country. And it's about damn time that it gets rounded up. I'll bring you the, you know, latest on that. We do have more information about the killing of Charlie Kirk. And of course, more and more people are becoming suspicious of what we know so far. It's been over a week since the murder of Charlie Kirk. And what we've been provided in terms of evidence is very scant, very thin, not particularly convincing if you aren't trying to be convinced, in my opinion. There are still some pretty big gaps as far as I see it. And I've been saying for the last week that if they have the video footage they claim to have, if they have the images of the shooter that they claim to be in possession of, then they need to release it. And it would squash all of the speculation. It would silence all of the guesses as to who could really be behind this or what could be the, you know, truth behind things like the text message exchange. And the text message exchange in particular is coming under a lot of scrutiny, for a lot of reasons, not the least of which would be the fact that it sounds like a script, like a not very particularly good script. And I've got a couple videos to highlight this. Let's go first to clip number 31, little little humor for you here. This is pretty much how the text message comes across to those of us who are looking at it with a skeptical eye. It looks an awful lot like this. Let's watch.
Hello, my love. You have no doubt heard of the shooting, and I must admit, 'twas I. I had hoped to keep the secret to the grave, but alas, I have not lasted the better part of an hour. Why have I committed this act? 'Twas the hate of the man. Reason had no purchase in the poor soil of his soul. You have not asked, but in case you were wondering where I hid the rifle, my love, 'twas over yonder by that lingering squad car. My old man shall surely be missing it presently. Do you remember how I was engraving bullets the other day in front of you? Well, it was just to do a big meme. Look no further into that. Also, I shall now misquote my own meme. Ooh, woo, oh, woe. Probably makes no difference. I apologize to involve you and for this text to be so short, but I am on the lam. In conclusion, I beg you keep this from the prying eyes of the fuzz.
Yeah, pretty not convincing. Pretty thin stuff there. And even the things that he says, like, don't exactly make sense. He was going to keep it to his grave, but he also had already written a confession note that was under the guy's keyboard. That's a little contradictory. No, he's telling the guy about this for the first time. The guy's also seen him engraving bullets. That's kind of odd. Obviously, the question of using the terms like squad car, a little bit suspicious. It's all very suspicious, actually. On top of the, you know, sort of inconsistent narrative we've been given about whether he took the gun apart and put it back together, what exactly we see, you know, in the video of him jumping down from the roof, the fact that that video should show and does show, if you rewind it back 30 seconds, the place where the shot was taken. So why they wouldn't include that in the release doesn't make a lot of sense. The only clear image we have, actually identifiable, of the suspect on campus that day is that picture in the stairwell that they apparently used AI to create and doesn't even look like the guy. So people know, it's like, well, this doesn't even look like the same guy. And they're like, oh, well, that's because we used AI to enhance. So we don't even have any evidence that shows that this kid was the guy who shot Charlie Kirk. If it's out there, great. I'm excited to see it. But it hasn't been presented yet, and questions are piling up. Some people notice that the conversation, the text conversation, did seem an awful lot like the outcome of a prompt into ChatGPT, going something like, write a text exchange between two gay lovers where one admits to killing Charlie Kirk. It's like, they don't miss a beat. He covers every single loose end in that text chain. Confusion about the rifle, he covers that. Confusion about where he went, when he went there, he covers all of that. It's all, and some people are saying, and maybe the semi-benign answer to this is that he was trying to give cover to his boyfriend. So they have an exchange where it's like, I did this. What? You did? No way. I had no idea. But if he's seeing him carve bullets beforehand, like, that doesn't even really make sense. None of it makes sense, I guess, is the long story short. But people have actually looked into this, run tests on this. I've seen some varying responses, but most of the tests that have been run say there's a high likelihood that this text exchange was, in fact, created by AI. We'll go to a video that explains this, clip number 37, where an expert on AI was asked to run a program to determine the likelihood that the text exchange was generated by machine learning. Let's watch.
Bet you didn't see this. Hey, man. So you know a whole lot more about AI than I do.
Yeah, facts. What's up?
You saw the ridiculous text chain, right?
Oh, you mean between Robinson and my love? Yeah. Yeah, I did. Unfortunately.
Do you think you could plug that into an AI generator and see what it spits out?
Oh, yeah. I'm on it. Oh, you are not going to believe this. 100% AI, Ian. 100. Not 90%. Not even 50%. 100% for sure that is AI.
Well, imagine that. Do me a favor. Send it over to me real quick.
It's on its way.
Can you hear me through the white noise, friend?
So That's all real. That actually happened. My buddy Kyle here actually looked it up, put it through an AI detector, and sure enough, 100% AI. You know what else is real, though? Just got done with my podcast. It's been now, I don't know, a few hours. And in the few hours from the time that he put it into that detector until now, now it's saying something a little different. Check this out. If I said that it seems like they probably realized that's what was going on and they got to it and changed it, that would just make me a conspiracy theorist, right, guys?
All right. Winstester. And in case you're a radio listener, what it showed was that the first time they put the text in to the, you know, AI tester, it said 100% created by AI. Like you said, not 50%, not 90%, 100% AI. Then after a few days, they put exactly the same text into exactly the same AI tester, and it says 100% confidence human created, not AI. That's a little odd, isn't it? And maybe they did some sort of update of some sort. Certainly not suspicious or anything. So it goes from 100% AI to 100% human over the course of a few days. How very interesting, the exact same text. So now I'm even more suspicious. It's almost like they're stuck in this loop where everything they do to try to cover up their tracks only exposes them more in a way. At least that's the way I'm interpreting it. And some people have pointed to this. I'm suspicious of this as well. From the New York Times, the article is "Texts from Suspect in Charlie Kirk Shooting Offer Insight into Motive," and it goes through this text chain. But the way that it describes it has people wondering if this was a poor choice of words or an appropriate choice of words. What it says in the New York Times is, quote, "The text exchange between Mr. Robinson and his partner was reproduced by prosecutors in the charging document. It shows that Mr. Robinson had texted his partner shortly after the shooting Wednesday about a note left under his keyboard, which read, 'I had the opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk and I'm going to take it.' The partner reacted with shock, asking if he was joking. 'You weren't the one that did it, right?' But the fact they use the term reproduced, that's a little bit suspicious. Shouldn't it just be produced? When you say reproduced, doesn't that mean you created it? Isn't that a little bit odd? Maybe that's the right word. Maybe that is the right word. But they kind of did the same thing with the letter, where they're like, there's the letter and we have evidence, forensic evidence, it exists, but it's been destroyed. But we've recreated it somehow. And I guess the excuse for that was that they have a picture of it. So the guy took a picture of the note, then destroyed the note, but provided the picture to law enforcement. Which, again, it's like, okay, we almost have a lot of good evidence. We're really close to having totally solid, substantial, and verifiable evidence. But I don't know if we've gotten over that hurdle quite yet, personally. And it's just little word choices like that that make people question. Now, wait, what do you mean they reproduced the text messages? Do you mean they produced them or they reproduced them? Those are different. Those are different things. And you'd think the New York Times would be very careful about the way that it chose words. But despite, you know, regardless of, you know, who actually pulled the trigger and how widespread the conspiracy was to pull this off, obviously, it has exposed a very dangerous situation in America with radical left terrorists gleefully celebrating this murder and acting like they are doing something innocent, like they don't even know what they're doing wrong. It's really very disturbing and very sick, and it's happening at the highest levels. Let's go to clip number 20 here. This is Ilhan Omar talking about Charlie Kirk in a church, of all places, and we'll watch the video and then I'll try as hard as I can not to Fed post about it. Let's watch.
I do believe those of you who are interested in rewriting this hateful man's history are full of shit.
Thank you.
This hateful man's history. And the people behind her laugh. Now pull up the video again. Let's see who this church is full of. So this is a church. Of course, Charlie Kirk was a very strong Christian. Oh, it's all old boomers. Oh, it's like a collection of elderly white people clapping along as a Muslim woman stands at their pulpit and demonizes a Christian who was just martyred for his faith. Look, I can't really express fully how that makes me feel and what I think should be done as a consequence. And I say that because I really want the people in power to understand that I am like the least likely person to want to do anything. And that if I'm feeling like I'm feeling it, having seen Ilhan Omar standing in the pulpit of a church desecrating the memory of Charlie Kirk, I guarantee you there's a million, probably between 1 in 5 million people with the capability to do something really horrific that are way more pissed off than I am. And like, we can't, we're being deliberately provoked, I think is what's happening. I think Christians in this country are being deliberately provoked to try to get a response. And it is entirely incumbent on the politicians that exist in office right now and their law enforcement to deal with this issue as severely as necessary so that we don't have to. I'm telling you, there's a lot more people out there that probably feel a lot more strongly about the sanctity of a church and the importance of not desecrating such a place than I do. And I'm very mad at this. Experts warn leftist celebration of Charlie Kirk's death signal a dangerous mainstream shift in politics. And honestly, it's just sickening to me that you have a church full of people cheering this woman, demonizing a Christian martyr. I mean, it really is sickening, and there really is something very disturbing going on to the surface. And we'll get into what some of these like underlying causes might be. But Ilhan Omar is the easiest target of all time. There are so many things that she has done that we have evidence for, proof for, that in any normal situation, she would be punished for by the government. Why they don't, it's impossible to say. I have some ideas. I have some theories about this. But one thing is that she married her brother in order to get a visa. And I've always been sort of annoyed at how this talking point is deployed, because people seem to think that she like actually married and is in love with her brother and that she's in some sort of incestuous relationship. That was never the issue. The issue is that she circumvented our legal immigration system by claiming to be married to her brother so that she could come in on a wife visa when she was never married. So it was, she got into this country fraudulently. Okay. Now they refuse to censure her. Why would they refuse to censure her? Why would the GOP refuse to censure Ilhan Omar for this? What she has said about Charlie Kirk, what she has said since he was assassinated, is so unbelievably outrageous. And again, it's like her saying it is one thing. We know the left is full of insane psychos. We're well aware of that. The thing that really makes me mad is the response of the cowardly, limp-wristed Republican Party, who I genuinely don't know what's wrong with them. I genuinely do not understand where their survival instincts have gone. It makes no sense. It especially makes no sense when you look at some of the actions that have been taken against Congress people, congressmen, congresswomen in the past. Every time it's against a right winger, and the Republicans often lead the charge. And I've got some examples of this. And when you really think about what we're talking about here, it really boggles the mind. And there is no rational explanation for it. I don't understand it. One of the things, you know, one of the arguments against, because we got these other stories, like there's this story from Information Liberation. Mike Johnson holds private meeting with Jewish leaders, pledges to screen out anti-Israel GOP candidates. So we can get into this story in just a second. But there's a lot of talk about this and about the control that Israel has over the Republican Party and the way that they're claiming that not wanting to be involved in a forever war in the Middle East is isolationist. And you've got the Republican leadership pledging to keep out isolationists i.e. if you're America First, you are no longer welcome in the Republican Party. That's extremely, extremely troubling. But I've got people, you know, talking about that and saying, well, if Israel really controlled Congress, why won't they vote out Ilhan Omar? She's such a, you know, thorn in Israel's side. She's so anti-Israel. Wouldn't they weaponize the Republican Party against her? And you would think, one would think, why they don't? Couldn't possibly say. Could not possibly say. Now, they voted to censure her, and it failed by one vote. Every Democrat voted against censuring her, obviously. Four Republicans joined them. Now, I did some research because I wanted to see. I thought, well, you know what? Maybe AIPAC just isn't cracking the whip on these guys. Maybe they don't have any leverage over them. I mean, if AIPAC really is, you know, this big enemy of Ilhan Omar, would they not use the Republican Party to censure her and try to remove power from her, kick her off committee assignments, that sort of thing? Well, the four representatives who did not want to censure her is allowing her to get away with this and maintain power over the American people. And by the way, the reason the excuses that they're giving are like, you know, well, it makes me sad to see Ilhan Omar say, we have free speech and we have to stand up for free speech. And I want to remind the congressman, there is no threat to free speech about saying that I do not want a murderous foreign interloper with power over the American people. She is not American. She does not consider herself American. She does not have any love for our foundation and our founding principles. She doesn't give a damn about free speech. She literally constantly talks about how much more she loves Somalia than America. Should we go to one of those videos? Because I've got several, but we can go to one. Clip 17 here. Ilhan Omar, again, just gushing with her love of this failed state, Somalia, which appears at the bottom or second to last on every single list of human development in the world. When you list every country by their development, Somalia is bottom or second to bottom on every list. It is a total failed state. It is just a playground for warlords and pirates. It's chaos manifest. And we rescued her from this chaos because if she was still there, she'd be dead in the ground because her family was part of one of the warring factions involved in this constant turmoil, this just node of chaos that we call Somalia. But here she is, clip 17, talking about how much she loves it and just can't wait to get back there. I'm an American migrant, she says, in the U.S. Congress. But I am a Somali girl, a girl with your lineage, a girl with your language, a girl with your religion. That was a young child taken from her country, like she was stolen on a slave ship, that misses her country and wishes to live there. Well, you may have your wish come true, lady, and share with its people. I'm hopeful in the future that me and my children will be able to raise our kids in this land where I was born and raised. Okay, great. Then we completely agree. We can take it down. We completely agree. You belong in Somalia. Your mindset, your language, your ideas, your philosophy, your character, it is Somali. It's not American. And so, when we should, kick her back to Somalia because she lied about her immigration, or she lied about her status in order to circumvent the immigration restrictions, then I don't want to hear a complaint. I want to hear a big thank you. I want a big thank you card from Ilhan Omar when we joyfully send her back to Somalia, never to return. Won't that be a wonderful thing for all of us? She can't wait.
Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot do this without you. You're the reason we're here. You're our sponsor. You are what keeps us on air. And we are launching today through the 23rd of December, the final days of Christmas sale at theolivestore.com. 60% off on our best-selling ultramethylene blue, Irish sea moss gummies, and Shilajit gummies, and more. If you haven't tried our ultramethylene blue that is the strongest, best out there that we found, bar none, you're crazy. What it does for your mitochondria, your energy, your stamina, with no letdown, is insane. It's so good for you. Just research the studies. We have medical grade. We have the best. And you've seen all our guests and others that come in here, and they're just blown away by it, including those who are already taking methylene blue. They're like, wow, this is way stronger, way better. It's amazing. I'm challenging all of you. I'm challenging everybody to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds. We are in the red. I met with accountants this morning. Not too bad, but we're there. And we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones Backup Network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and get 50% off on all future orders in perpetuity until you decide to cancel. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition, over 700 designs at thealexjonesstore.com. So my challenge to all of you is this. Get a bottle of ultramethylene blue for 60% off right now, and then you're going to be blown away and reorder it. You've heard all the people call in with their testimonials. This is the real deal. The best salesmen sell the best products. I promote and sell freedom. I promote and sell stopping the globalists. You know my information is the most accurate out there. Why on earth would you think that I would tell you this will change your life? The Shilajit, the Irish Sea Moss, the bovine colostrum, Ultimate Life Force, Spike Protein, Cardiovascular Detox. All these are kick-butt products. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Please do your Christmas shopping there. We need your support. It's a win-win for everybody. You keep this operation. It's a true thorn on the side of the globals on the air. And separately, the classic Nitric Boost. Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, I didn't know she knew about it. She bought it. So this is the best formula for your heart and for Spike Protein and for everything else. And men notice it the morning when they wake up. It is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com exclusively. InfoWarsStore.com Nitric Boost. All of you need these products. Take action now.
Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me. Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I really do have so much other stuff to talk about today, including stuff like the fact that in the UK, Bible Gateway is now blocked. The Bible Gateway, the most popular online Bible website or app in the world, which is used by millions and millions of Christians around the world to find Bible verses, has been removed in the UK due to the Online Safety Act. You can no longer access the Bible in the UK because the Online Safety Act tells you what's really behind some of these free speech laws they're putting into place, the anti-free speech laws. So I want to get into that sort of stuff. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, but obviously, Charlie Kirk, the assassination of Charlie Kirk, what we are finding out about it. There's new information about other perverted communities that this suspect was involved in. And I'll get to all of that. But in the wake of this, a simple resolution honoring the life of and legacy of Charlie Kirk after his assassination passed in the U.S. House, 58 Democrats could not bring themselves to show respect for Charlie Kirk and voted against it. But it passed, so at least it passed. But when it comes to the censuring of Ilhan Omar, it didn't pass. It failed by one vote because four Republican congressmen voted against it. And as I was saying before, this was presented by, you know, somebody online saying if AIPAC controlled the Republican Party, why wouldn't they, you know, oust Ilhan Omar? And hey, that's a great question. I think actually, if you really think about that, it brings up some very uncomfortable questions about what their purpose really is and what their priorities really are. Because I can tell you, four Republican congressmen did not vote to censor Ilhan Omar. They were Representative Mike Flood of Nebraska, Jeff Hurd of Colorado, Tom McClintock of California, and Corey Mills of Florida. Those are the ones that voted not to censure Ilhan Omar and allows her to stay on committees. Now, in case you're not aware of how this works, the committee is the choke point for bills to get through. Committees, there are multiple committees, and if you're on the committee, you get a say on what bills go to the floor to be voted on. So all bills start in committee, and once the committee passes it, does it go to the floor, and then it goes to the Senate, and then it goes back to the... But it all starts in the committee. So if you're on these committees, that is where the real power is. Like, as a congressman, sure, you can vote on stuff, but if you're not in a committee, you don't really have much sway. You don't really have much impact on what bills come to the floor for people to vote on. So kicking somebody off of these committees is really stripping them of the actual power that they're supposed to have as congressmen. Now, the four who voted against censuring Ilhan Omar have all received at least $45,000 from AIPAC. Mike Flood has received 46, Jeff Hurd has received 64, Tom McClintock has received 44,000, Corey Mills has received 48,000. So why these AIPAC-funded Republicans are not voting to censure Ilhan Omar, I don't really know. I'm not really sure why that is. Clearly, there's some sort of inconsistency there since she is such a prominent and powerful voice against Israel, but I guess they want her around for some reason. So I don't know. You can ask whatever questions you want about that. But what it really goes to show, I think, is just the complete willful impotence of the Republican Party. Because I don't know if I need to remind you this. Over the last 4 years or so, there have been multiple examples of Republicans being stripped from committee assignments or being kicked out of Congress totally. And in many of the cases, the Republicans have led the charge on this. And by the way, do they think that they're getting good boy points for doing this? This is the thing that really I have a hard time comprehending. You know, George Santos is one of the people who was kicked out of Congress, mostly by Republicans. Have you heard anybody say, you know, you can say what you want about Republicans, but when they have a bad apple, they get rid of it. Not like those Democrats. They'll stick by each other no matter what. But the Republicans... You know, you got to be morally upstanding or else they don't want anything to do with you. No, I've actually heard the exact opposite. There's a woman I was talking to who was like, you know, I want to like the Republicans, but you look at somebody like George Santos and it's like, gee, both sides are bad. It's like, wait, what did George Santos even do? I don't know. He like lied on his resume or something. And then what happened as a consequence of that? The Republicans immediately kicked him off of everything and ousted him from the Congress. Totally weakening themselves, totally hurting themselves, but doing it because, you know, this guy was not good and they didn't want to be associated with him. Was there any, you know, goodwill brought about from that? Anybody say, you know, those Republicans, they had to make a sacrifice, but they did. They hurt themselves because they knew it was bad for the country to have a liar as a congressman. Are you receiving any kudos for that? Any goodwill for that? Of course not. Obviously not. So let's go through some of these stripping of committee assignments that have happened in the past. Marjorie Taylor Greene lost her House committee assignments in 2021. Now, what did she do? Did she justify the murder of a political opponent? Did she slander a dead man? No. Do you even remember what it was? It was about past comments in social media posts promoting conspiracy theories and violence. What violence? Nothing, really. I think this actually had to do with Jewish space lasers, if I'm not mistaken. I think they went on Facebook posts, found stuff from, you know, long before she was ever even in politics, found she had promoted a September 11th conspiracy theory and stripped her of committee assignments for that. Nothing that she'd even done while a congressperson, and went back into her old social media posts, found something they didn't like and stripped her of committee assignments. I believe Nancy Pelosi did this without even like putting it to a vote somehow. I don't even understand how that is possible. Representative Tom Cole, Republican of Oklahoma, distanced himself from Green's past rhetoric, but said the issue of kicking her off committee should not be adjudicated by the House Ethics Committee. But then it was, and there you go. She was just taken down. So Marjorie Taylor Greene, stripped of her committee assignments by the House Ethics Committee, not even by a full-fledged vote of the House, because she had questioned the 9/11 attacks. Here's what she'd said. We'd witnessed 9/11, the terrorist attack in New York, and the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania, and the so-called plane that crashed into the Pentagon, she said at the time. It's odd that we're never given any evidence shown for a plane in the Pentagon, but anyways, I won't. I'm not going to dive into the 9/11 conspiracy. So they pulled that up and kicked her off her committee assignments. Okay? Compare that to Ilhan Omar justifying the murder of an innocent man. And Republicans are like, well, gee, what can we do? I mean, we're not going to strip her of her assignments. We can't set that precedent, as if it hasn't already been set over and over and over. They're not the only one. Steve King removed from committee assignments following racist comments. Y'all remember this one? Unceremoniously stripped of all power he had in Congress. Why? Because he gave an hour-long interview to the New York Times in which one sentence was objectionable, in which he simply said, I don't understand why these terms white supremacy, white nationalism, Western culture are being used as pejoratives. Right? Well, why are these bad words? White nationalism. What, you know, why is that bad? He's not saying I'm a white nationalist. He's not saying I am a white supremacist. He's saying that, you know, this whole leftist mind virus is insane. And you're basically demonizing white people and demonizing white countries. You wouldn't do that to any other group. Why do you do it to ours? It was one sentence out of an hour-long interview, and it was the Republicans that led the charge to strip him of all his committee assignments. Now, is what he said even remotely as offensive as Ilhan Omar, let alone even more so? Of course not. And yet the Republicans will stand up for Ilhan Omar, and they throw Steve King under the bus. Have you been rewarded for that? Have you been pat on the head by your masters for that? I wonder. Republican Representative Steve King of Iowa has been removed from committee assignments following racist remarks. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy announced Monday the latest development in the bipartisan condemnation of King's recent interview that appeared to lament that the term white supremacist is considered offensive. It's like such a bizarre, like, he's just having a conversation. He's just like, yeah, they use white supremacist as an insult. Like, it's weird. Well, I'm not even sure what he was trying to say exactly. But it was Kevin McCarthy that kicked him off. And it was Mitch McConnell that led the charge in the Senate. He says, one of my quotes in the New York Times story has been completely mischaracterized, going into lengthy detail of what he described as a 56-minute interview with the publication. He concluded with, I will continue to point out the truth and work with all the vigor I have to represent the 4th District Iowans for the next 2 years. And he was stripped from his committee by Kevin McCarthy while being criticized by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, saying there's no place in the Republican Party or Congress for the country of an ideology of racial supremacy of any kind, except for Jews. Except for Jews, right? This is the thing. He merely mentions white supremacy in a less than condemning tone, and all the Republicans immediately come together to distance themselves from him, condemn him, strip him of his committee assignments, and just shuffle him off to the side, spitting on him as they can. Meanwhile, you have Ilhan Omar, just traitor, just absolute vicious, hateful moron from a foreign country who constantly is reminding us how much she loves her own country more than America, how she gives speeches in front of her congregation saying, I'm there to do the work for Somalia. I'm there to represent Somalia in the American Congress, who makes these incredibly offensive and hateful posts about Charlie Kirk, in which he justifies his murder and says it's a good thing, or claims people are trying to whitewash the fact that he was a hateful bigot. Republicans can't seem to bring themselves to condemn that. I wonder why. I wonder why. I don't know. I don't get it. I have an idea, though. We'll get to my theory in a second. George Santos expelled from the House of Representatives. House of Representatives voted 311 to 114 to expel New York Congressman George Santos, making him the sixth member ever to be expelled in the vote of Congress. This was back in 2023, when the Republicans, of course, to uphold our, you know, great reputation, kicked this guy out, weakened themselves. He was accused of financial misdeeds, including reimbursing himself for loans to his congressional campaign that he appears to have never actually made, in essence, stealing money from campaign donors, as if every single Democrat doesn't have their wife or husband running an NGO that they funnel millions of dollars to. Take a look at Maxine Waters if you want a specific example. Nancy Pelosi's daughter is another one. But it doesn't matter. They replaced Santos. They expel him. So Steve King, Marjorie Taylor Greene, George Santos, all of them stripped of their committee assignments. George Santos kicked entirely out of Congress with the cooperation and joyful, enthusiastic participation of the right-wing party in Congress. But when it comes to Ilhan Omar, they just can't bring themselves to do it. What is wrong with them? What is wrong with them? And this is the thing that I think makes the discussion about Israel so important. Because while the issue of Israel is one thing, this foreign state and its control it exercises over America, it's all of the other influences that come along with that. It's things like the ADL and AIPAC, who, yes, their main focus is stopping people talking badly about Israel or, you know, making sure everything Israel wants passes through the Senate. At the same time, who do you think is advising the likes of Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell to denounce Steve King for white supremacy? Do you think it might be the organizations that constantly are the source of the claim that white supremacy is the biggest threat to this country? That white supremacy is the only threat, you know, worthy of considering action against? Do you think maybe, like, think about this. You've got these people that are dedicated to AIPAC, that receive tens of thousands of dollars from AIPAC, and yet these very people who will kick Steve King out of his committees for white supremacy but refuse to kick Ilhan Omar off her committees for the deplorable thing she said about Charlie Kirk. How does that make any sense? And if you expand it out even, you know, wider, and where you're talking about specifically the assassination of Charlie Kirk, why do you think it is that we haven't gone after Antifa for the last 10 years? What force in politics do you think is keeping Antifa from being labeled a domestic terrorist up until now? I know exactly who it is. It's the ADL. They publish it on their website. They train the FBI. They are who the U.S. government goes to determine who's a domestic terrorist and who's not. And the ADL will remind you over and over and over again, they're on the side of Antifa. So you've got Antifa training the FBI as to who is domestic terrorist and who isn't. Gee, I wonder why they haven't been dealt with so far. I wonder why this festering cancer of leftist extremism has been allowed to grow unabated for the last 10 years. Could it have something to do with the fact that anybody who wants to move against them gets slapped down by AIPAC and the ADL? It probably is. So these things are not separate. They're deeply intertwined. The ADL and AIPAC are funded by and work directly with the Israeli government. The Israeli government uses those organizations to not just, you know, prevent people from speaking out against it, either passing anti-Semitism laws or, you know, the money that's always passed, but also to make sure that white supremacy is considered the number one threat and is in the top of everybody's mind. And that if a Republican congressman says something objectionable about white supremacy, they get kicked out immediately. But Ilhan Omar hates America, hates Charlie Kirk, lying about it, saying just the most horrible things. She stays on. She doesn't get voted against by the very people who AIPAC funds to the tunes of $50,000 each. Do you see what I'm saying? Are the dots connecting here? From FBI.gov, from the official FBI website, March 8th, 2017, the FBI and ADL working together to fight hate. I sang you, this is from celebrated, legendary FBI head, James Comey. Old Jimmy, we love him, don't we? Well, he wrote this love letter to the ADL. I sing your praises as an organization that fights for inclusivity and diversity, equality and justice, an organization that works with us to fight hate crime and terrorism, to educate law enforcement, and to build bridges with underrepresented communities. I labeled that last speech a love letter to the ADL. 3 years later, I can say from the perspective of the FBI, we're still in love with you. What? What is this sickening, saccharine, sweet love story between the FBI and the ADL? Well, it's why we have Antifa. It's why they exist. It's why they've never been treated the same way the Proud Boys were, or the Oath Keepers were, or InfoWars was. Somehow, InfoWars was declared a white supremacist organization in 2013, and was spied on for 12 years, never brought charges because we never did anything wrong, because we're not a terrorist organization. How does InfoWars get declared a terrorist organization in 2013, but Antifa is literally killing people routinely? Aaron Danielson, shot in the chest, Antifa celebrating it. We got one. And he goes on and on. I don't know if I grabbed the video. Tim Pool describing some of the stuff he's seen Antifa do. We've all seen it. We've all seen it. It's continuous, which is what makes it so absurd when you have people like Jerry Nadler say, Antifa doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. Absurd, but an ADL talking point. So not only is James Comey writing these love letters to the ADL about how brilliant they are and about how they direct the FBI to do everything they do, the ADL says it themselves, May 30th, 2014, did you know the ADL trains every new FBI agent on their role as protectors of the American people and the Constitution? Well, that's got to be a good thing, right? I mean, they're the Anti-Defamation League. They're the ones who know all about hate. They're the best to tell everybody. But the problem is, if you go to the ADL, you can find articles like this. Who are Antifa? And they say this. Antifa is a decentralized, leaderless movement composed of those collections of groups, networks, and individuals. Persistent disinformation campaigns about Antifa distort public perception of the movement. Antifa's professed purpose is to vigorously oppose fascism, guys. It's in the name. They're the anti-bad guy contingent, so how could they be bad? They're the anti-bad guys. It's in the name. Okay? Sure, I mean, when they're, you know, firebombing a pro-life protest, you know, that might seem bad, but they're not bad because they're the anti-bad guys. So how could they be bad? While some extreme actors who claim to be affiliated with Antifa do engage in violence or vandalism at rallies or events, this is not the norm. No, not the norm. No, it's a bunch of upstanding, productive citizens, isn't it? Because there's no unifying body for Antifa, it is impossible to know how many adherents are currently active. Different localities have Antifa populations of different strengths, but Antifa adherents are also sometimes willing to travel hundreds of miles to oppose a white supremacist event, you know, like a Trump rally. Why do you think we haven't dealt with Antifa? It's the ADL. That's why. Why do we have this festering cabal of domestic terrorists openly operating on American soil? It's the ADL. It's Israel, who works hand in hand with the ADL and has for decades. And it goes on and on just to downplay everything about Antifa, celebrate everything about Antifa, tell you everything you've heard about Antifa that's bad is wrong. And actually, they're just, you know, innocent anti-fascists. And anybody who does commit violence in their name isn't actually a part of them. Isn't that convenient? Do you think the ADL gives the same leniency to right-wingers? Are you kidding? Obviously not. What about this? As one of their hate symbols, wrap your mind around this. The ADL is a list of hate symbols. One of their hate symbols is anti-Antifa images. So if you have symbols showing that you don't like Antifa, they say that's driven by hate and it's white supremacy if you oppose Antifa. So the people training our FBI have in their official, and I printed out these today. These are all from the website today. The articles are from 2019, 2017, but this is the official status of Antifa, according to the ADL, who trains our FBI as to who is extremist and who isn't. And they say not only is Antifa not an extremist group, not a domestic terrorist group, not even really a group at all. They're just people who share in a wonderful idea about being against fascism. They also say being against Antifa is hate, is terrorism, is white supremacy, and should be investigated. I wonder why Antifa has been able to grow. Although white supremacist animus is often thought of as being directed against religious, racial, and ethnic minorities, a significant portion of their hateful rhetoric is directed against the political left, including both the mainstream and far left. For example, a common alt-right meme offers free helicopter rides to people on the left, a reference to the tactic used by right-wing dictatorships in Argentina and Chile. White supremacist anti-left or sinistrophobic, is that to be scared of sinister people? What does that even mean? Oh, left, left-handed, sinister is left hand. So we're afraid of the left. That's what that. Okay, so you got the ADL making up words to justify demonizing people that don't like mask-clad communists burning down their cities. So the symbolism especially targets far left and anarchist activists who've dedicated themselves to actively opposing and exposing white supremacists. So again, anti-Antifa imagery. Yeah, here's Antifa. Here's the ADL's pets. Here's the ADL's good boys who didn't do nothing. Oh, just innocent, loving, anti-white supremacists. Look at these white supremacists. The cops are white supremacists in this. How dare they lock a gate against a roving mob burning down the construction site where you're building throwing fireworks at cops. Look at those damn cops. What are they doing? One guy's bald. He's probably a skinhead. How dare he oppose these wonderful, beautiful leftist activists with his white supremacist ideas of being against Antifa, wanting to kill him and trying to in that moment. So, again, we can get more into this, but like, to act like Israel's influence in America is somehow a separate topic when it comes to the Charlie Kirk murder, the rise of Antifa, the, you know, criminal gangs that are operating in this country, often foreign funded. Because, by the way, Antifa gets funding from Germany. They get funding from all. It is an international crime ring. And they are defended by the very organizations that are in charge of educating the FBI about extremism itself. Why do you think they haven't been dealt with yet? What do you think the solution is to deal with them? I think if you want to deal with Antifa, first and foremost, you need to deal with the ADL, who's the one that's been stopping us from dealing with this the entire time. That's my take on it. We'll get to more on the other side. We're going to start with a John Bowne report about the way the FBI has been going after right-wingers, including TPUSA, rather vociferously, also at the behest of the ADL. I want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Buy yourself some of the merchandise, get yourself some of the supplements, take advantage of the massive sales, become a VIP member, and know that you're contributing to this singular outlet that is pursuing the truth no matter where it leads us and no matter where we go. Ultimate Life Force, absolutely incredible. Ultramethylene Blue. I heard Alex say it has like an 80% reorder rate. That is crazy. That's crazy. It's unprecedented, folks. Find out why. Ultramethylene Blue, USP grade, now on sale. TheAlexJonesStore.com. We'll be back on the other side with a powerful John Bowne report. Don't go anywhere.
I didn't plug last hour because I've been so focused on the news. If I don't plug, we won't be here because I'm not funded by the Qataris or the Israelis or the Russians or the Jews or the Easter bunnies. I am funded by you. So I'm going to sell you products that really work so you want them. Now, we got two different flavors, Fruit Punch and in Freedom Mango. I didn't name this. It's a very, it looks like a firecracker. It's a beautiful cover. Ultimate power. How about unlimited power? Emperor Palpatine. But it really is a pre-workout, post-workout, Turbo Force 2.0. I mean, this is seriously powerful, super high quality. Everything it does for your body is next level. Ignites mental clarity and focus, cleans, sustain energy, enhance blood flow and endurance, supports daily cognitive function. L-citrulline converts to L-arginine. Don't know what that does. We got the best formula of it. It's amazing. L-theanine, relax, wake up, clarity and focus. Natural caffeine from coffee concentrated. Vitamin B12, the highest quality, B6 and more. This is really strong. If you love Turbo Force, you're going to love Ultimate Power. We should call it Unlimited Power. I've never probably on the cover. The point is that it funds the operation. I said, hey, we need a clone of this product or make it better for their store. And they said, okay, this is what they came out with. I've been on them for a year to do this. It's really strong. Tiny little scoop. This thing, by the way, is heavy. This is like a whole bunch of servings, like a couple months worth. So get yours now. I like the fruit punch flavor. And by the way, today's one of the last days where you can get 60% off on Ultramethylene Blue, Irish Sea Moss, Shilajit, and more. at thealexjonesstore.com. Thanks for your support. Hour number four is straight ahead.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.